The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from several sources. I'm going to start with an article we've been reading from AARP, the magazine, about Rob Lowe, and we're going to finish it up today. We have a few final questions for him. How many kids does Rob Lowe have? One, two, three, seven? He has two. When Lowe's first son, Matthew, 31, was born, a friend suggested he talk to Hollywood super agent Michael Ovitz for advice on getting on lists for elite L.A. preschools. Rob and Cheryl immediately moved the family to Santa Barbara, an hour and a half away from Hollywood. I thought, I am not ever going to raise my kids in a world where I have to go to my agent to figure out how to get them into preschool, he says. That was literally the straw that broke the camel's back, and we left. Lowe says he has loved raising his kids out of the spotlight. I had a vision of myself coaching Little League, which I did. I coached everything I could. It was one of my favorite things I did as a dad. And I didn't want to look over at the sidelines and have the head of NBC over there, who I'm waiting to hear from whether they're going to renew my show for the fifth season. He remains very connected to his children, having co-created and co-starred in Unstable with John Owen, 29, and working with Matthew on the financial side of Lowe Family Business. So I get to do the creative entertainment stuff with Johnny, and then I get to do the business part with Matthew, says Lowe. Nevertheless, with the kids out of the house, Lowe and his wife have completely embraced dog parent life with two Jack Russell Terriers, two German short-haired pointers, and one mutt. We treat them like kids, he says. Next question. What does Lowe do with downtime? Sleep? Surf, ski, travel, all of those. Lowe is admittedly not very good at sitting still. If he does have a quieter day, quote, I sleep in, have my coffee in bed, I do my prayers and meditation, I spend some time with the dogs, I go to the gym, I'll check in on business, if nothing is pending, I'll go and play a round of golf or surf, and then come back for dinner with my wife at home, and then she'll want to watch TV. I'll go to the fire pit and have a cup of coffee or something like that, and then off to bed. End quote. But Lowe is an irrepressible thrill seeker. It seems that since putting alcohol to rest, adrenaline is his drug of choice. I am still that fifth grader in the springtime, barefoot, running around outside, he admits. A few years ago, for instance, he was delighted to find out that in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, if you ski over 100,000 vertical feet in a day, you make it on the leaderboard, he says. He did it, of course, and plans to go back to repeat it, and to ski an infamous run, Corbett's Couleur, a double black diamond surrounded by steep rock walls with a nearly vertical entrance, also known as America's Scariest Ski Slope. He has also run in a lion-infested game park in the Serengeti, where humanity first ran, he marvels, super primal, and cruised on a stand-up paddleboard over great white sharks at California's Manhattan Beach. If I'm going to go skiing, I'm really going to do it. If I'm going to surf, I'm really going to do it, he explains. It makes my wife crazy. The current bucket list item? The final frontier, space. Shatner did it. I'm definitely doing it. So has Lowe calmed down a bit as he entered his 60s? Sure. Maybe half. Not at all. And the check mark is on not at all. After Lowe turned 60, he sought the advice of a 70-year-old idol of his, who told him to keep being active, but to just dial it down, since with age comes injuries and longer recoveries. So I promptly dialed it up, he says. He was absolutely right. Over Christmas, I fell on a wave in Hawaii that I had no business being on and separated a rib. It still hasn't healed. Nonetheless, he says, he leans into the wisdom imparted to him by none other than Clint Eastwood. Never let the old man in. And last question, is Lo ready to become a grandparent? Not ever. Absolutely. Maybe in a few years. And the answer is, of course, absolutely. I have a probably overly inappropriate interest in my son's love lives because I'm angling for grandkids, he says. It better happen. For now, he's toying with what name he would like to be called, whether that's Papa or something fancy like Opa. He suggests our readers call into his podcast with possible grandfathery nicknames. Maybe something fun like Mim, which he used to call his own grandmother. By the way, there's never been a better AARP conversation than this, right? He jokes. Really, this is it. And this interview was by Nicole Pager, who's an award-winning freelance writer, published in the New York Times, Woman's Day, Wired, People, Rolling Stone, Variety, and more. Now looking at an article in AARP The Bulletin under the heading of In the News, and there's a couple of items here. Let's look at tooth or consequences. New evidence shows we skip flossing at our peril. Researchers in Japan recently published a study indicating that bacteria from gum disease can slip into the bloodstream and infiltrate the heart, causing a buildup of scar tissue that raises the risk of irregular heart rhythms. White House seeks lower drug prices. President Donald Trump signed an executive order in May that directs the federal government to tell pharmaceutical manufacturers to meet price targets on their products that match what other countries pay. AARP and other advocacy groups applauded the order as a useful step to help older Americans with expensive medication. The order directs the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, to give most favored nation price targets to pharmaceutical manufacturers and monitor their effect on meeting them. If manufacturers do not make significant progress toward these targets, additional steps could be taken. The White House says, though, many questions remain on how the plan will work. For too long, big drug companies have been ripping off America's seniors, charging the highest prices in the world for life-saving prescriptions, says Nancy LeMond, AARP Chief Advocacy and Engagement Officer. An analysis from HHS and Rand Healthcare found U.S. drug prices in 2022 were nearly three times as high as in other countries included in the study. Then we have FBI, elder fraud is skyrocketing. Older Americans reported nearly $4.9 billion stolen through fraud last year, with an average loss of $83,000, according to an annual FBI report released last spring. That's a stunning 43% increase in 1 year. Americans of all ages reported a record $16.6 billion stolen through internet scams and fraud in 2024, up 33% over 2023's losses, with an average loss of just over $19,000. The FBI's report shows that fraud affects people of all ages, but when older adults are victimized, the impact is often catastrophic, says Kathy Stokes, AARP's Director of Fraud Prevention Programs. Investment scams took the largest financial toll on victims 60 and older last year, with more than $1.8 billion in total reported losses. Cryptocurrency investment fraud is a growing concern, notes Christopher Delzato, Section Chief for Financial Crimes, FBI Criminal Investigations Division. Last year, the FBI received more than 41,000 complaints with $5.8 billion reported stolen. Scammers use financial grooming, also known as pig butchering. They pretend to be the victim's friend or romantic interest before suggesting a sure bet investment opportunity. You can check the free AARP Fraud Watch Network helpline. That number is 877-908-3360 for information and support. Next, limits on free COVID shots coming soon. Federal health officials have outlined plans in the New England Journal of Medicine that indicates a narrower population could have access to updated COVID-19 vaccines this year. Rather than making the shots available to all individuals 6 months and older, as they are now, officials at the Food and Drug Administration said in a spring article that the agency could limit eligibility to adults 65 and older, as well as individuals with at least one underlying health condition, like asthma, heart disease, diabetes, or obesity. And these rules seem to change every time we turn around, don't they? And finally, on this page, first ever blood test for Alzheimer's. More than 7 million Americans have Alzheimer's disease, and testing for it may come soon and be a lot easier. The Food and Drug Administration, FDA, has approved the first blood test that can help doctors diagnose the disease in some patients. The test, called LumiPulse, can detect abnormal clumps of protein known as amyloid plaques in the brain. These plaques disrupt brain cell function and are a hallmark of Alzheimer's. Before this approval, in May, doctors used PET scans and spinal fluid tests to find the plaques that forecast the disease. But those procedures are expensive and, in the case of spinal tests, invasive. LumiPulse requires only a blood draw from patients age 55 or older who are showing signs of symptoms of the disease. Having a blood test just makes it so much easier in being able to make a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, says Charles Burnick, MD, a neurologist with the Cleveland Clinic Lou Ruvo Center for Brain Health in Las Vegas. The test's manufacturer, Fujiburo Diagnostics, has not yet put a price tag on it. LumiPulse measures two proteins in blood plasma that correlate to the presence or absence of amyloid plaques in the brain, reducing the need for a PET scan, the FDA says. Doctors can also use neurological exams and cognitive tests to diagnose Alzheimer's. In recent years, the FDA has approved two medications for treating Alzheimer's, Kinsula and Leqembi. These drugs, given by infusion, don't cure the disease, but can help slow the rate of decline in people in its earliest stages. Some Alzheimer's specialists already use blood tests not cleared by the FDA to help with the diagnosis, but agency approval opens the door for insurance coverage and more widespread use. Now we're going to look at the article in Psychology Now about introverts and extroverts. And last time we talked about how you identify where you stand, and this, or given the guidelines. Today we're going to look at understanding where you sit. Sometimes it can be tricky to decide which is the dominant preference. Each person will have a range of characteristics that span introversion and extroversion at different points. It can be interesting to explore which behaviors are learned or else a response to current demands. And the latter reflects a person's true preference. However, as Carl Jung once said, there is no such thing as pure extrovert or pure introvert. We can often be a mixture of the two depending on the situation and circumstances. Case studies. When types swap preferences. German scientist and playwright Johann Wolfgang von Goethe observed two functions of the human heartbeat: the systole, a movement of convulsion in the heart or lungs, and diastole, a movement of the dilation or relaxation. Systole and diastole are also known as interplay of polarities. He accepted this familiar idea, or he applied it to personality theory. It's more complex part of his theory, this idea of systole and diastole, though they have a practical and helpful extension. One example can be applied to a marital relationship. Offering a day-to-day example of this idea, visiting fellow Steve Myers said, "Suppose an extrovert woman marries an introvert man, and during their careers the husband takes a break after their second baby to spend time with the children while his wife enters the world of work again, after a few years leading on domestic life. During the husband's break from work, the wife is out all day in an extrovert job, which is systole in Jung's metaphor. When she gets home at the end of the day, although she is an extrovert, she still needs to compensate a bit by spending time on the quiet side. That is, she needs to introvert for a while. However, the husband has been on his own with the children doing introversion or diastole for most of the day. So when the wife walks through the door, even though the husband is an introvert, he needs to compensate by spending time on being an extrovert. He needs to talk to her. So there is a conflict between her wanting a quiet time and him wanting to talk. That sounds very similar to the example in work. What difference does this make in the marital setting? When they got married, she married an introvert husband and he married an extrovert wife. But in this new scenario, when she walks through the door, she only sees her husband in an extrovert mode and he only sees his wife in an introvert mode. The other person that they see now, that they each now see, seems opposite to the one they married. In the worst case scenario, can lead to a breakdown of the relationship. But if they have the toolkit to understand these dynamics of extroversion and introversion, they will realize that neither of them have changed. Rather, the dynamics of their systole and diastole interactions have changed with the new circumstance, which means they tend to see a side of the person that they previously hadn't noticed so much. With this insight, they can then reconstruct their lifestyle to get back to a more balanced experience of each other. Extroverts can open doors, but introverts can keep them open. Who is the best networker, the extrovert or the introvert? Some may instantly assume that it would be the sociable extrovert, and others may be certain that introverts are better at deeper connections. Catherine A. Bandino, executive coach and author of Stepping Into My Shoes, said, "The essential point here is what you mean by networking. It is not about walking around a room, some even say working the room, collecting business cards and then coming back to the office, asking yourself who these people are, what they do, and what that means for the future of their business. That's the extrovert. The retrained introvert, whom we will call Pat Intro, on the other hand, will enter the same room in the same circumstances and engage with the other guests or delegates and actively listen to their statements. In doing so, Pat is already entering into a relationship with the other parties and creating a bond with their interlocker. The truth of the matter is that Pat also can learn as much as their counterpart, whom we will call Pat Extra, can from them. Catherine believes that the extrovert can teach Pat Intro how to break the ice with one-liners that can be used when approaching a stranger. These could be open questions that require more than a yes or no, like, what did you think of the last speaker? Or, what is your interest in this subject? I saw you speaking earlier to person's name. How do you know them? She adds, the introvert will teach Pet Extra to literally shut up, listen, and ask pertinent questions. They will teach them to develop an honest interest in the needs of others and, dare I say, actually teach them some modesty. Whilst the extrovert will be there for the sole purpose of being center stage and promoting themselves, Pet Intro will use their listening skills to explore how they can help their associations. Above all, Pet Extra has to realize guests at this event are not there to buy their services, but to sell their own. By finding out what the other party is interested in, the introvert will be able to offer introductions that can be of interest, and in doing so, they will initiate a long-term connection. The wonderful thing is that in the end, we can all learn from each other. Viva la difference! Now back to the magazine. We have some short items here today in the Upfront Live page. A different game of life. Play a card, score a meaningful conversation, win stronger family bonds. From my experience, there's not much social about social media. I've spent afternoons with my grandchildren, watching them with their heads down, working their thumbs on their phone screens as if it were an Olympic sport. I worry about their social skills. So, to engage their minds, I gathered them around the kitchen table to play a conversation starter game. We set our phones aside and focused on each other. Surprisingly, they were eager to get started. A number of conversation card games are on the market. I have Table Topics and Relish. Others include Talking Point, Tales, and Delve Deck. They rely on the premise that reading printed questions to each other will spur discussions that wouldn't occur organically. Indeed, the game took us down some unexpected paths. A question about TV shows somehow led to politics. One about favorite foods had us pondering the benefits of olive oil, which led to talk of organic food and turned into a conversation about climate change. Our varied life experiences became apparent, too. I talked to my grandchildren about writing checks and what it meant when one bounced. They found this as confusing as I find cryptocurrency. I listened to each one of them explain how they wanted to be remembered by their descendants someday. Turns out they had thought about their future. Their answers gave me new insights into how they saw themselves, and I began to see them as full people, rather than just my grandchildren. In turn, I think they saw me as having a life before becoming a grandmother, even as they found it strange that I survived growing up without text messages, memes, and the likes. The game taught me that our children and grandchildren have a great deal to say, and they need to be heard. It is up to us to keep conversation alive. In fact, it's in the cards. And this piece was by Janie Emos. Next, we have Too Many Treats. If your pooch is putting on pounds, the problem might not be what's in their food bowl, according to Leslie Kovar of Bothell, Washington, a veterinarian for more than 30 years. You have to consider what else you are giving your pet daily, including all the treats, she says. Daily calories from treats should equal no more than 10% of the food total. If people do the math, they're feeding more like twice the recommended amount of or more in treats, says Kovar. Now, let's look at surprising places where germs live. Spice containers. A 2022 study published in the Journal of Food Protection found that people often spread food bacteria to the spice shakers they use as they cook. To prevent cross-contamination, wash your hands before cooking and after handling raw meat, and clean the spice containers after each use. Microwave control pad. Bacteria from something else you touched in the kitchen can be transferred to the microwave controls, says Don Schaffner, chair of the Rutgers University Department of Food Science. Wipe the pad with mild soap and water. Avoid spraying cleaner on the pad or using disinfecting wipes. Whirlpool bathtub. Bacteria can grow in the pipes and then shoot out when you turn on the jets. These microscopic bacteria become an aerosol that can get into your lungs, says Rita Moyers, a retired Texas A&M University microbiologist. Purchase a special sanitizing cleaner for whirlpools and jetted tubs. And finally, the laundry room. You would think this would be one of the cleanest rooms in your house, but warm and moist environments are hot spots for bacteria and mold, especially in a basement. Run a fan to keep air circulating, says Patrice Richardson, author of the book Laundry Love, or use a dehumidifier. Well, with the few minutes we have left, we're going to AARP the Bulletin, and in a relatively recent edition has another list of ways to save. So this one will start with grocery shopping. Use self-checkout. Self-checkout can lead to a decrease in impulse purchases, in large part because shoppers are paying attention to what they're buying and how much things cost when they're scanning the items. Beware of end cap sales. Strategically placed to capture your attention, these sales don't necessarily represent the best price for an item. You might get a better price in the aisle where the product is normally stocked. Go for reusable coffee pods. As an example, 24 disposable K-cups of Folgers cost $13.82. A 26-ounce container of Folgers will make more than 50 cups for around $13. At that rate, reusable K-cup coffee filters at $9 for four will quickly pay for themselves. Use your store card and load digital coupons. At many supermarkets, your frequent shopper card automatically registers discounts, but some stores have an additional digital coupon program for other items. Peruse the online circular and select the items you want in advance, or do this in the store at a dedicated kiosk. And finally, buy frozen veggies. Do you find fresh produce going bad before you can use it? Frozen veggies are flash frozen at the peak of ripeness and keep for months in the freezer. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.